So, last topic. Well, it's not really the last topic of the course, but it's the last topic that you need to cover for assignment 8. And then what we're going to do for the last 4 nights, tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, next week, you know, next Thursday is work night. That's for anyone who hasn't finished. But what we'll do is we will go, first of all, over all of the assignments, and I will give you more and more examples that you can use to work from for your own efforts. And I'll also go over some topics which you should know, but which you don't need to have for any assignments. So, for example, you guys have heard of threads. You know what a thread is? Like a thread of execution. Yeah, like there's a thread. A thread of execution is the same as a process. Like if you're on a Unix system, there are multiple processes running. Each one is a program that has a life of its own. And Java is a language which is designed to do what is called multi-threading or multi-processing and give you control over it. So I'll show you about that and how you can see a thread, how you implement a thread, what good it is, and so on. We will go over JDBC, which is one of the very powerful and very useful aspects of Java. It is the interface between Java and SQL, which is structured query language for those non-database people among you. Actually, I usually have a lot of students who are familiar with databases and database queries and so on. Java has a very nice interface to SQL databases, which are relational databases of almost every variety. So Sybase and Oracle and so on, all the big databases, Access, Microsoft Access. It also can interface to Excel, it can interface to text files and so on in a very straightforward way. So I'll show you about that. I will show you a little bit, not too much, a little bit about Java Beans. These are all topics upon which you can build the skills that get you jobs, that kind of thing. So, we'll be doing that and mixing it in with finishing up our assignments 6, 7, and 8. Any questions on where we're heading in all of this? Any questions on where we've been? What's that? Servlets. We do that in advanced Java. Servlets and RMI and these kind of things are complicated enough that we spend a lot of time on them in advanced Java. I mean, really, you would see me do a servlet or an RMI stub skeleton pair or something, and you'd go, what happened and why? Right? What a servlet is it's a way of interfacing with an HTML document interactively across a network and where you can have access to the facilities of a cooperating computer from a Java program where you couch questions in the form of HTML queries to the server and it then creates the web page answer to the question. It's also a very powerful tool, but it's complicated in terms of what you have to do to write the do post, do get, etc. communications. Oh, what a big, if you look at the almanac, you'll see it's a growing book. It's about yay thick now, and it's full of things that you can do with Java if you know how. RMI, which stands for Remote Method Invocation, is a way of you running a distributed program. So once again, if you have cooperating computers, you can run a Java program where you're actually calling a method in an object on a different computer. So you're having many computers do jobs for you, which is inherently a powerful tool. But once again, they have to be cooperating computers. You can't just go out on the network and tell a computer to do something for you. So, sounds like I've left you guys dazed and confused. sorry you asked. Yes, it is in the fall, like month after tomorrow. It actually is going to be me. They have Viswanath listed, but he decided he had too many classes. So I am it. I actually tried to get out of it, because how many nights a week can I be away from home? But he was slipperier than I. Yes. Oh, you know what? Advanced Java, we make it up as we go along.
But it's only one night a week.
It's only one night a week. Yeah. We do it in a room with computers, and I sometimes talk about things, but everyone ignores me, so. It's like in here, only you actually have something to do while you're ignoring me rather than just dozing off. How many of you guys have eyes drawn on your eyelids in here? What's that?
You might be able to
three or six. It's JBuilder 3 and JBuilder 5. Depends on which one works. Once again, we went over there. It's in the room that we went over to, at least it was in the past, in SG 137, and it's never worked properly. So there's a lot of frustration involved, like the applet policy file was missing the last time. And the network was supposed to connect to the My Projects folder, and it didn't. Assignment 8. is prove to me that you understand polymorphism. And it turns out to be, well, I think it's a very easy idea, but it turns out in practice that a lot of people have trouble with it. So I guess it's not that easy. Okay, so here I have my person class, and remember I had a name variable in the person class. And then a bunch of other stuff. So don't copy this down and then put it into the computer and then run it and say, well, it didn't work right because there was a bunch of things missing. I told you there's a bunch of other stuff. This is the sign of laziness. What does super dot two string mean? It means call the two string method in the super class. This is just an easy way of getting the name all first, middle, last, all tied together, and then I add the ID number at the end. No, because it's not a static method. But I can say super dot. So far, so good? Now, what is this called if I have a method that's the same name, same return type, same access specifier, same arguments as the method in the superclass? Remember, what happens is I inherit automatically the method from the superclass, and now what I've done is
override.
This is called overriding that. That is, the compiler knows if I make a student and I say s.toString, to use the students, not the persons. Okay? Yeah? Make sense? Now, that's familiar, right? This is is my assignment A, and I can say person P equals new person. Now, of course, what you guys will be doing is using your Windows or whatever to display the data, but I could say system.tostring, and I should get the person's name on the console, right? I create a person variable, I instantiate it with a person object, I say system.println.tostring, and that should return a string which then gets printed on the console. That's understandable, right? No surprises there, correct? However, look at what else I can do. I can say P equals new student. And now what happens? Same thing with the ID number. So I have two lines of code which are identical that do two different things. That's what polymorphism means. It means that a variable can take on many forms. It's a really powerful programming tool if you learn how to use it and you understand it. There are some really simple rules to implementing it. Yes, sir? It's a variable of type person, but now it contains a student. It's a student. Remember, a student is a person, right? You're a person and a student. I'm a person and a teacher. So, if I ask you a question, you can say, I don't know. If you ask me a question, I can say, I'm not going to tell you. Same thing, people, but different behavior. The toString method in student, if I have a student variable, if I use the toString method anywhere in student, it uses its own toString method. If I use toString method in person, it uses the person toString method. But over here in this person, in this program, A8, I have a person variable, I store a person in it, it uses the person one, I store a student in it, it uses the student one, even though the code looks identical. Which means what? At runtime, it has to figure out, well, what kind of object is in there, and then call the correct method. You guys already saw polymorphism in what assignment? I told you when I showed you. I said, this is polymorphism, and you're all going to see it and then forget about it. And then I'm going to tell you again. Remember the vector? What's a vector hold? An object. But what did you put in it? Those of you who used vectors, you put in all the different kinds of variables, but they were all treated as if they were a generic object. Here is the rule. If you have a hierarchy, and remember, object is the top of all of these hierarchies. If you have a hierarchy, and you have a variable of a superclass type, you can store into that variable any object of that type or any object below it in the hierarchy. So if I have a hierarchy, object, person, student, grad student, for example, if I have an object variable, I can store into that an object, a person, a student, a grad student. If I have a person variable, I can store into it a person, a student, a grad student. A student variable holds a student, a grad student. The grad student can only hold a grad student. Got it? Easy rule. That's rule number one. Rule number two, which is the important rule. This rule is important to understand because it doesn't work if you don't do it. But rule number two is where the power comes in. If you have in your hierarchy a method which appears at every level of the hierarchy, and that method has exactly the same interface, remember interface, the idea of access, return type, method name, arguments. Okay, so it's an identical interface. If both of those things are true, then when you store an object of any type from the hierarchy, the runtime engine automatically figures out which method to call for the appropriate object. So you will notice that the object class, for example, has a toString method in it. It also has an equals method in it. And what you can do is you can take advantage of that, for example, with a vector. If you write for your student class or your person class or both an equals method with exactly the same interface that's used in the object class, then you don't have to typecast to use equals, and you don't have to typecast to use toString, because those methods are already available to you. In fact, if you look, you see there's a bunch of methods available to you automatically in the object class. And you can override those for your own classes. But in this case, what I've done is I have a toString method in my student class, which prints out the name plus the ID number. And I took advantage of the fact that the superclass had the first part of what I needed. I didn't have to use this. You can use anything you want. You can literally put any code you want in here as long as it returns a string. Okay? And the same with the person class. I can put any code I want in here as long as it returns a string, then it matches the object toString method. Which means I could do what? I could actually have an object variable O and say O equals new object, or O equals new person, or O equals new student. And when I say O dot toString, it does the right one, calls the right method. Yes? Well, you tell it where to get it by putting an object of the type you want in the variable. Whatever object is stored in this variable P, its toString method will be called. You don't want to, otherwise you're not doing polymorphism. You want to call the person's toString method, make a person. If you make a student, well, too bad. You're still calling the person's toString method, you just don't know it. Well, you wrote the program, so you do know it, but. Okay, so what can you use that for? Well, yes.
Are you saying that polymorphism is not necessary that a person is known as being an object?
Right. Right. You have to. Here's what you have to do in your assignment 8. You have to have your hierarchy, and you have to have a method in the superclass that you make, it doesn't have to match the object, but it should match. The superclass has to have a method in it, a matching method with different behavior in the subclass, and then call that method through a variable of the superclass type. If that makes sense. So there's two parts to the assignment. One is to write the classes so they have a common method, and two is to call them using this mechanism. If you make new person, new student, and you have a person variable and a student variable and you call it, there's no magic in that, right? It does exactly what assignment 3 did. In assignment 8, you make a superclass type, and then you store a subclass object into it, and then call the method. That's different, I hope. So let me show you a simple example of why that's useful. Let's say I have a vehicle class. Some of you actually do have a vehicle class. Okay, what is a vehicle? Something that moves, and it moves something, right? It's not only something that moves, but it's something that moves something, you know, it's got a, like a cargo, right? A fly is only a vehicle, you know, if it's got like a flea on it. Flea on a fly, then it's a vehicle. Okay, so, a vehicle has the following methods, for example. It's got a load method, a go method, a stop method, and an unload method. Those are methods which you could, you know, if you're just making up a vehicle, you could say, well, I'm going to make up a vehicle, and it's going to have those methods in common. Well, then what I can do is I can have all different subclasses. I can have rocket ship and sailing ship and car and motorcycle and truck and any kind of vehicle you can imagine. And whatever it is, I'm going to just use the same program, which is v.load, v.go, v.stop, v.unload. And what I can do is I can write a program which does these things independently of what kind of vehicle. And then if I can think of a new vehicle, teleportation, whatever, all I have to do is implement the code for the new vehicle. I don't have to change this program at all. This program here stays the same no matter what. Yeah, so I can make up a new class in the vehicle hierarchy. And whatever the new class is, as long as I include these methods, I can use this program over and over and over. It's a very powerful tool. One of my students last semester actually did a whole interface where each vehicle knew what interface, knew like what windows, what the window would look like and what the different displays would look like and so on for the vehicle. And then he had a simple program like this, and when he put a new vehicle in it, he put a car in it, it would show car controls. When he put a ship in it, it would show ship controls and so on. It was a clever program. Rotten kid, 14 years old. It took me a long time to figure it out. I was looking at his program and going, what in the world are you doing here? And then I realized that what he had done is he actually designed the interfaces, and then he went to the I.O. project. Have any of you guys looked at that yet? He looked at the I.O. project and saw that you could read and write objects. And he took his interface, converted them to objects, and then stored them in a database. And he would read out the correct object to display. Oh, what a rotten person he was. 14. He had to come to school with his mother to get permission to be in the class. Very good programmer. He also got my joke, which was nice. I sent him a note at the end of the semester saying it was nice someone understood my joke. You guys understand my joke? I told you, Java is no laughing matter. So, we'll see. What I'll do is I'll show you a couple of demos, a very simple one and a little bit more complicated one that use that tool. So what you guys have to think through is you have to think through, do you have a method, and do you have a method in common in your hierarchy that can actually exhibit this behavior? Turns out it's a little bit complicated problem, but not very. In fact, when you look at my A8 demo, you'll go, oh, well, that's totally easy. I can do that. Then you have to modify it to your own ends, right? So what does it allow me to do? For example, in the demo that I did, it allows me to make up a data file with different kinds of people. In my case, what I do is I make a 3 data type hierarchy. I have person, and then student and teacher that extend person. That's why I had that example on the tip of my mind. And I make up a data file, and in my data file, I have a code which says what kind of a person it is. Right? Is it a person? Is it a teacher person? Is it a student person? And my program doesn't change. And what I can do is I can modify the data in the data file, and it automatically figures out, is it displaying a person's data, a teacher's data, or a student's data? And the interface changes depending on which kind of person it is. And then I can go in and I can edit the data file and rerun the program without recompiling or anything. And it automatically displays the correct interface for the correct kind of person based on what's in the data file. Got it? Makes sense? Oh, you guys are quiet. I don't know if this is getting through or not, or if you guys are quiet because you're saying, oh, this is so easy. This is college. Why don't mind my taking this? Listening to him tell us about that. It's like having someone tell me how to tie my shoes. Okay, so why don't what we do, last night I didn't give you a break at all. Tonight I'll give you a break early, now, start up the machine, make sure I've got the correct demos on here, and then we will go to work early tonight so that we can press on through the fog. Oh, and I have your assignment sixes. Most of you guys are going to get your assignment sixes back to embellish further. Some of you put part one on it, meaning this isn't done, I'm just going to give you something so that you don't go home alone. And some of you gave it to me without a note that said, this is only part of assignment six, so then I put a note on it for you that says, this is only part of assignment six. Yes, sir? Everything is due. That's the due date. The last minute of the 9/11 on the 18th. And I don't take anything after that. And did I talk to you guys about due dates when we started this semester? Okay, I get complaints sometimes from people. They say, I should have due dates for everything. See, I do. I give like a suggested schedule. I say 2 weeks or 2 days after I hand it out, 2 weeks in regular semester. And then I get people who get really nervous because I don't say, it's got to be here next Tuesday or I'm not going to correct it. And there's a reason I do that. It's because everybody learns at their own rate. Now, some of you really need someone to say, this is when it's due and it has to be done then or you fail. So go find somebody, hire somebody to tell you that. But I don't do it that way. I just expect that you guys will figure it out at your own rate and give it to me when you figure it out. Because some people, they just don't get it. And then all of a sudden, they get it. And then they can do everything, and then it's easy. Right? So, I just let you do it at your own rate. Some people get it done early. Some people get it done late. Everybody gets it done by the last minute of the last day. Okay? And I've never had due dates. People say, do you take off for late work? I say, no, because there's no such thing as late work unless it's after the last minute of the last day, in which case it's no work at all. Okay. So, have a break. Look, I brought cold water. Okay, so open. Is this the one? Okay, I actually got questions from several people who are wanting to do images of whatever, like the basketball thing and the truck thing and so on. So this is a little program that's an A7 demo, and what I do is I just demonstrate an item listener and some other things. One of the things you've noticed is that when you go to open your files and whatnot, it goes to a certain place in the directory hierarchy, and you can actually set that. And in this case, what I do is I go out as the system, you know, system.in, system.out, and so on. The system actually has a number of things you can get from it, including the size of your monitor and whatnot. And in this case, you can also get the user directory, which is your home directory. And that way, when you go to open files with the file dialog, it goes to a known place to start. What do you suppose this double backslash is? That's one backslash. Two backslashes is one backslash, okay? There's an easier way to do this. Which is file dot... Now let me see if I can remember... Separator. But I'm not sure if it's upper or lower case. Let's see. File class not, oh. Let me try it again and see if file dot, it is lowercase, separator. Okay, if you use file dot separator, then whatever operating system you're on, it will fill in the correct slashes. Because when you go out and you get a directory, with the system properties, it doesn't include the final file separator, like the final backslash, a colon on a Mac, or a forward slash on Unix. So file dot separator terminates the string properly, so you have a complete path to the directory. Okay, what I'm going to do here is demonstrate item listener. It's one of the listeners I talked about last night. Like the action listener, it's very simple. It has one method you have to implement, which is item state changed. Okay. And what this little program does load traces, you already know that, right? That's just a button that says go out and get the file. In this case, the file is a list of animals. I say open, and oops. What this is a choice, and choice implements item listener, so you can listen to choices that you make, all right? And here's how a choice works. When I hold that black triangle, it gives me a list that I can scroll up and down in the list. I can pick something from the list. That is not a chicken, right? Okay? So, for those of you who want to display pictures where you pick something, you choose something from a list, and then you display its picture, well, what you do is you go out and you get its picture off the internet. These are images I just downloaded from the internet. You go get the pictures. You store them in a file. In this case, what I have is chimp.jpg, elephant.jpg. chicken.jpg, so that whatever I pick on the list, when I change what I choose, I then append the JPG to it, and then I have the image to display. Yes, sir? Mm-hmm. It's simply draw image, and you give it the get width, get height of the screen, and it will make it. I will show you how I put this up, because this image is actually on a canvas, and the image is resized to fit the canvas. So that's what I was going to, remember before the break I told you I was going to show you that? I'll show you that. And it applies to a canvas, it also applies to a window. Okay, so that's the A7 demo, and I believe that's upstairs. Did any of you guys find that upstairs? Well, if you didn't, you will. It's not. Oh, shame on me. Then I will put it on a floppy disk, and I will put it upstairs. You think it's online? At your place. Okay. Here is the canvas. The canvas is very simple. This is all of the code for the canvas right here. Extends canvas. I have a local image. Now, this is a really important thing to know about. This is called expanding the scope of a variable. And you see it all the time in Java. I pass an argument into this class using the setImage method here. Well, normally that argument scope is from the opening brace to that closing brace, which means I couldn't use it in here, in the paint method. But I want to use it in the paint method because that's what I'm going to display. And remember, I can't call the paint method directly. So what I do is I have an image variable whose scope is the entire class. See, it's an instance variable. And then I take the argument and I assign it to the local variable. And now I can use it anywhere in the class. So it's a real simple trick. You see it all the time, but you have to know it. The scope of local image is the whole class. The scope of the argument image is just this function. By assigning one to the other, I now make it available to anywhere in the class. So that's trick one. Trick two is how to display it. Draw image is the method. That's what we looked at last night with Goofy. That's the image we're going to draw. That's where to start it. And then I just call get width and get height for the canvas. That gives me back the size of the canvas. That says how big to make it. If I wanted to make it twice as big, I just multiply by 2. If I want to make it half as big, I just divide by 2. It automatically resizes. But it resizes using pixel replication to get bigger, so it ends up looking funky, blocky, pixelated. So you saw the elephant looked kind of pixelated, because the elephant image was a little tiny one. The chimp, may see, this doesn't change the aspect ratio. So, of course, one of the things that happened last semester was someone was doing pickup trucks or something, and they all ended up being either mushed or, you know, stretched out. So then what that student did was they figured out that you can get the width and the height of the image, and then you can figure out the ratio to fit in there. So that's like a good math problem, to get the image so that the image fits in the canvas and also keeps its proper proportions. Okay? It's just a simple arithmetic problem, but it takes a little bit of thinking to do it. Okay? But each of these objects has whatever you need to know about it embedded within it. Okay. The MyFrame class has the choice. See, it has some other things which we don't use. What I did was I had it so you could put the list of animals in a list, or you could put it in a choice. And then you can either double-click on the list and use action performed, or you can scroll up and down the choices. Otherwise, this code here, something you already understand. You know exactly how to do this. These are all of the items that I listed on the board here in terms of simple components that are commonly used in an interface. Button, list, choice. And they get added in, you know, there's the set bounds and the add commands for each of the components. MyIO, it's just exactly what you used before. And the startup class is the place where the work is done. Action listener, item listener. Action performed listens for the button. Opens up the file dialog, goes out and it reads line by line from the file, and it adds each line to the choice in the frame. The choice is that scrolling list. So I just go out and I read, and each line in the file becomes another choice in the scrolling pop-up. Close the buffered reader. And I go out, I have written the display image, you'll see that down here, a display image method, and what I do is I say, give me item 0 from the choice, add JPG to it, make it a JPEG file, and display it so that when my program starts up, it shows you the picture of the first thing on the list. Item state changed means I went out and I scrolled up and down on the choice and picked something. When I pick something, first of all, I see if it was the choice that actually was the item, because I could have radio buttons and other things that have a state change in them. I go out and see, was it the choice? Is there a directory to read from? That's where I built the directory name up at the top, user directory, and if for some reason that system variable isn't set, then this won't try to read anything else. And then it calls display image, and I use the directory with the file separator. I get the item, get selected item, gives me the item that I chose from that scrolling menu, and I add JPG to it. See, this call and that call are almost identical. This, I get item 0 here. I get selected item, meaning the one that was highlighted. And then it calls this method here, display image. I pass it the file name. This call right here is exactly what we looked at last night for Goofy. I pass the image to set image. That's it. Puts the picture up and fits it to the canvas. So it's not a very complicated program. It shows how to use the item listener, and it shows how to use the choice menu thing, and it shows how to put an image into a canvas. If I wanted to put an image into the whole frame, do exactly the same thing, only put it in the frame paint method. Right? The call is the same, because a frame being painted with an image and a canvas being painted with an image is identical code. Okay, that's the A7 demo, which is on the download site. What's that? We think. Well, I'm sorry. And that's a pixelated elephant. What could I do? You said that's a rooster. What could I do? Do we all feel better now? Change the file name along with it. Details, details, right? That's why it's called A7 demo. Okay. Don't let this happen to you. Is this the kind of stuff that happens to you guys? You bet. Let me see if I even have my A8 demo on here. I hope I do. A8 demo. Okay, so let me just show you what this program does. It's pretty simple. It's got a load button, a next button, a previous button. So I say load. I go out and I find the data, I open the data, it makes a little display. I say next, this is a student, it's the same display only, it has an ID number at the bottom. Next, I have a teacher, same display, only it has a list of their classes at the bottom. There's another student. There's another person. I can go backward or forward. So that question about current plus plus, current minus minus, this is the previous, subtract one from the current. It's just an index into the array. Next, 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 previous, previous. Okay? So, this is a polymorphic program. This is assignment 8. Okay? Notice that the display changes based on what kind of a person it is. So, let's just go see. It's a very simple-minded implementation of this. I have 3 kinds of people. So I have put here a case switch, and there's lots of ways to do this. This is just a very simple way to do it, based on what kind of a person it is. So I have a data file, and in the data file, I have a code and then a name and an address, a city, state, zip, and then if it's a student, I have an ID number. If it's a teacher, I have a list of classes, and if it's a person, I don't have anything. Down at the bottom here, right here, is the polymorphic method call. Okay? See, let's go up to the very top and see what we have here. We have a person array, just an array of people. This is the Windows setup. You all understand how that works. Here is an action performed for the buttons. This is the load the data, next, previous. So this next and this current here is simply the index into the array of what person I'm displaying at the moment. Here I use the current index and I say, display equals pcurrent.getDisplay. That is a polymorphic method call. Every person type has their own display type. One has got just the name and the address. The other has name, address, ID number, name, address, and a list of classes. So that's a polymorphic. See, I don't say it's a student or it's a teacher or anything. I just say person, get their display. How did I what? Current starts off as zero, and then I just incremented and decremented as I push those next previous buttons. File. Right. Okay? So here, I get the information for each kind of person. You see, I don't say get the information for student, get the information for teacher. I just say get the information for that person. And the runtime engine figures out what kind of a person is stored in that array element and automatically gets the correct information. So we'll look at those function calls. All right? And that's the whole program. That's actually the driving program, which is the complicated part. The rest of it's pretty easy. There's the person class. These are the types of people. I could have implemented that in a different way, but I wanted it to be up front so you could see what kind of person was what index number. I have three text fields and a panel. So I set up a panel for the person, and I give them three text fields for their name, their address, the city, state, zip. Yeah. Final means it's constant and can't be changed. Well, they're going to all be inherited, aren't they? They'll be inherited in all of their splendor. They will be constant, they will be static, they will be shared. There is one and only one copy of each of those numbers, and it can't be changed. So when you guys saw color.red, color.blue, and so on, those are also public, static, final variables. Well, I said there's lots of different ways to implement this. What I did is I just put the numbers here at the superclass so that you can tell what kind of people there are. Obviously, if you have a program where you can have many, many kinds of people, then you won't implement it this way with a case switch, and with that you'll have some kind of an array mechanism for telling you what kind of a person it is. In general, good, robust programming design is going to not have anything in the program which is which has to be changed and recompiled. What you want is you want to have all of your critical data out on the data file somewhere, and the program figure out based on the data what to do. Okay, so this, what's this do? This calls and sets up the text fields. All this is doing in the constructor here is setting up the text fields for the person class. for the name, the address, the city, state, zip. Okay, the string tokenizer. How many of you guys experimented with a string tokenizer without going through? Yay, good for you guys. Here's a string tokenizer in action. I read the name as one line, I read the address as one line, and then I read the city, state, zip as one line, pass it to a string tokenizer, and the next three lines of code, city equals state equals zip equals, split that string up into three components. So I read one line, break it into three parts. Yeah, next token, because where it's pointing to is nothing at first. Right. Okay, and then here is the read info method for person. Notice that person's read info method is a stub. This is very common when you're designing a polymorphic program, is to have the superclass method not do anything. Okay, the superclass does all the default behavior, and then you just put a method in it, read info, with no code, because if you don't do that, then the polymorphism doesn't work for the subclasses. So it's just basically a no-op. So if you guys go into the object class and you see toString, it doesn't do very much. All it does is print out the address of the object. If you look at equals, it doesn't do anything, and so on. Okay, get display. Remember that call to get display? I said this is one of the polymorphic calls. This is the other polymorphic call. So get display simply sets the text into those text fields. And it returns the panel, and the panel can then be put into a window with the text fields with the data in them. Got it? So far so good. Let's look at the student. The student is exactly the same as the person. Their default constructor does nothing. Their buffered reader constructor, remember the person had a buffered reader constructor. The buffered reader constructor calls the one in the superclass. And that sets up the data display. For what? Name, address, city, state, zip. Because the person, the student, the teacher all have those in common. So I just reuse the superclass, and I have one additional text field for the student's ID number. So I add to the panel, where does this panel variable come from? From the superclass, I inherited it. So I add the ID number text field to that panel. Here's the read info. I read the student ID number. If the ID number isn't there, it gives me an error because I couldn't find the ID number in the right place. Get display. Well, look, see what I did? I just called the superclass super.getDisplay. That's what I showed over here earlier with super.toString. I called the person's getDisplay method to put in the name, the address, and the city, state, zip in the display, and then I set the text for the ID number and return the panel. The interface is identical. The name of the function is identical. The access is identical, so it will work for polymorphism. Teacher, absolutely the same thing. Except what I have is I have a vector for a class list. Remember, I had numbers in a list, and I have a list. So instead of having a text field, I have a list in the display. Otherwise, it is just the same. I set the bounds for the list. I add the classes. I call the person to set up the name, address, and all that. For my read info method, this is the polymorphic method for teachers. Same side, I have a string tokenizer. I read their list of classes from the file. and then I go through and I add those classes to the vector. Why do I use a vector? Because a teacher can have any number of classes, from 1 up to, 2,000 for a teacher. Get display. Well, isn't that simple? Super.getDisplay, return the panel. So I've already added the class list here, and I added the elements to the class list here, so I don't even have to set the text. I just return the panel. Okay? Identical to the superclass. If you look at the data file, oops, I didn't mean new, I meant open. That's what I get for trying to shoot over my shoulder here. Open, data, and here's the data. I have 5 people. A person type 1, type 2, type 3, a type 2, a type 1. I can add a new person. All I have to do is put the data type, the name, address, etc., and then any ancillary data like the ID number for a student, class list for a person. I can move these around in the file. The program behaves correctly no matter what. If I get the data mixed up, it gives me an error that says the data file was mixed up. I will run it once again just so that you can see. This is it. A blank panel if there's no people involved. Load the data. There's the data file. Open it up. Text field, text field, text field. Those stay the same no matter what. That's the read info method and the get display method operating for the student, operating for the teacher. There's that list that shows the vector elements. Okay? Yes, sir? Can I what? Yes, you can do all of those things. How would you do it? You tell me how you would do it. It's exactly the same as the demo that I showed last night where I was editing the items in the text field. I can change it. I could have a button here that I had a button in the list that said discard edit or whatnot. I can have this set up so that if I change something and I push the enter key, what happens when you push the enter key? Action event. Go to action performed. If string equals old address, don't do anything. Otherwise, set a flag that says the data has to be updated. When I'm all done with it, if the update is true, then go through the person array one by one and open up a buffered writer, file, write name, write address, write city, state, zip, write ID number if it's a student, not if it's not, and so on. So I can have a store method which is dependent upon is it a teacher, is it a student, or a regular person. Right? It's very simple to do. Right. The idea is detect change, a flag that says you made a change, and then you simply have, instead of read info, write info, and just turn all of the reads into writes. Have a write info method for person, have a write info method for student, which is going to do what? Call super.writeinfo plus write the ID number, same thing for the teacher, and go through that vector. There's a size method for vector that tells you how many classes, and just write. And there's actually a demonstration of that upstairs. The IO projects, which I've mentioned before, shows a name and address and so on being read and then being rewritten to a file. Okay? Assignment 8. You guys got, this is a little bit confusing trying to implement assignment 8. So you have like tomorrow plus a weekend to flail around with it and formulate any questions you have and get yourself into trouble, and then we have all of next week to get out of trouble. Yeah. There's only one method, action performed. Multiple methods, like window listening. Yes, they're all required. That's why they invented the adapter classes, because the adapter classes implement all the methods, and then you just override the one you want. Right, you just have to override the ones you want. So when we had that new window adapter, we just overrode public void window closing. Okay, I will see you guys upstairs. Onward with assignment 6, 7, and 8.